Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from the University of Central Florida, offering their Master's of Science in Data Analytics program. Designed to enhance skills in data analysis and machine learning, the new Artificial Intelligence track offers specialized courses to deepen understanding of AI technologies and their applications. More at ce.ucf.edu/data.
Artemis II is back on Earth. A new moonshot is underway. You're listening to Are We There Yet?, the radio show exploring space exploration. Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. The crew of Artemis II is back home after a successful mission around the moon and back. This week, we'll reflect on this mission's significance and how it's being used to inspire the new Artemis generation. We'll do that by meeting one teacher who's using this mission to inspire the next generation of space enthusiasts. And as NASA targets another Artemis launch next year, work is already underway to launch that mission from the Kennedy Space Center. Reflections on Artemis II and what's ahead for Artemis III, that's ahead on Are We There Yet? When the Artemis II mission lifted off April 1st from NASA's Kennedy Space Center, all eyes were eastward as the Orion capsule carried its crew of four on a moonbound mission that for more than 9 days captivated the public. The crew's poignant words on a new perspective on Earth were shared in news broadcasts, social media posts, and even at my local bar. The images of Earth from the moon, a view not seen by humans since 1972, took the collective breath away from us all here on the planet. All over social media, people shared an emotional tear when the crew announced the naming of a crater on the moon, Carol, after the late wife of Commander Reed Wiseman, and we held our breaths waiting for Orion's parachutes to open, safely returning them home. Artemis II brought us a shared sense of wonder, discovery, adventure, understanding, and place in this universe. To see so many people, even those who don't pay much attention to space news, captivated by this mission was an incredible sight to see. I see these things in many of the stories we cover on the Space Beat and on this podcast. Space exploration pushes our understanding of who we are and what we are capable of doing as human beings. As humans, we are explorers and long for an understanding of who we are, how our planet formed, and whether or not we are alone in this universe. The Artemis II mission will help us answer those questions. The images of our planet, fragile, like a glass marble on the darkest of black backdrops, gave us a new perspective of spaceship Earth amidst the vast cosmos. The geological observations of the lunar surface will help us understand our closest celestial neighbor and where it came from, and in turn, explain the origins of our planet. Artemis II achieved nearly all its set objectives as a test flight, except for that pesky toilet. What lessons are learned from this mission will go into the following Artemis missions, including one scheduled for 2028 that will return humans to the lunar surface for the first time in more than 50 years. NASA Administrator Jared Isaacman is calling this moment the golden age of space exploration. He has charged his agency with launching an Artemis mission once a year. He wants dozens of payload missions sent to the moon. And he's calling for the creation of a lunar base to host astronauts for weeks at a time, conducting science from the moon much like we do now on the International Space Station. Most of those missions will launch from here. Central Florida Public Media will be there to report on them. Only time will tell if Isaacman and NASA can pull off such an ambitious vision for our lunar future. But right now, he has the public support. The Trump administration called for yet another cut to NASA's budget, but a key lawmaker has rejected that proposal and seeks to fund NASA fully, a sign of support for Isaacman and his mission. The Artemis II mission was a giant step in a new direction for NASA, one that is taking the leap beyond low Earth orbit and venturing once again to places we've never been before. Artemis IV could take humans to the lunar South Pole, a mysterious region of the moon full of intrigue. It's also a dangerous environment for astronauts, with temperature swings that dip as low as negative 334 degrees Fahrenheit. Those astronauts who venture there, possibly as soon as 2028, will take us along for the journey as humanity roots them on, exploring places we've never been to. This podcast began in 2016 with a need and desire from our audience for more space news. In this post-Artemis II moment, that desire is reignited. It's our job as a news organization with a podcast that covers space to meet this moment, and we intend to do that by continuing our coverage of space on all of our platforms with a focus on capturing the curiosity, wonder, and awe of it all that the Artemis II crew brought to us. On behalf of the Are We There Yet team, we are excited to tell this story, and we are incredibly gracious that you, the audience, trust us with this task. As it's commonly said in the space world, as we embark on a new journey, I'll end with this phrase, ad astra, which means to the stars. And to the stars, we'll tell that story. Along with captivating the public, Artemis II is inspiring the next generation of lunar explorers in the classroom. At Goldsboro Elementary in Sanford, Florida, Robert Wakeland is in charge of the Magnet School's Space Lab. Just like art or music classes, students get to stop by Wakeland's out-of-this-world classroom to learn about space, including the Artemis missions. Our producer Marion Summerall spoke with Wakeland about the Space Lab and how he's using this moon mission to help educate and inspire students. Here's part of that conversation now.
Robert, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. We are currently in what you call the Space Lab.
In here, I have a scrolling LED screen that says, "We are the Artemis Generation." And I've had that probably since Artemis 1, where it's just getting ingrained in their head. They are part of the Artemis Generation, with the idea of, hey, it's not just about those four astronauts that are now have gone and returned to Earth. It is also about them, what they have the potential to go and eventually become as well. The main area when you walk in after my foyer is my my learning area. It's like more of the classroom setting, but then I also have like three other areas. One is the mission control, which set up to be like a mission control area, because at one point this whole program was started because we were a NASA Explorer School program. So the idea was to like simulate what a mission would have been in the shuttle era. So even though we don't maintain that software anymore because it's out of date and Windows has gone beyond that, we still maintain the lab and do functionalities and things related to space and mission control. And then our experiment bay, which allows us to do things in small groups with students, from doing flight simulators. I can hook up microscopes. So instead of looking through a small eyepiece, I have a 32 or 40 inch screen that they get to look in. So it gives them a variety of opportunity to do things. And then the last area is our planetscape, which there's two components to that. One is a lander area, where there is a couple devices in there with Bluetooth capability, and I have some bots and a 3D printer. And the other area is also a planetscape, which allows for a moon experience, but also I can change it to like a red color, or I can change the color scheme to any colors I will pretty much wanted to. So it just becomes, wow, I'm learning in a unique environment.
Literally looks like I've stepped into another world in here. There are posters all over the wall. I'm looking at JWST images. I'm looking at Artemis. Being able to look around the room and see some signs of Artemis, I'm imagining, must be pretty cool, especially because they got to watch in your classroom, you know, obviously the day after, since the launch happened at night, but some of the things that have been going on.
Like in here, I have posters that certainly relate to Artemis from Artemis 1 and the rocket. I also have in here pictures of Artemis 2 with the four astronauts. I also have the flight path in here. So again, I have the Orion capsule, which again, things I talk about regularly. So it's not necessarily in here a special occurrence, but more of, this is happening now. It's history in the making. Let's watch it. Let's talk about it. I showed to all three of my morning groups the splashdown video. In my lessons, we were talking about force. So I talked about the drag and the gravity. So I relate it to exactly what we're doing, you know. And then it's like, yeah, 90 minutes later, plus, you know, then the astronauts get off after splashdown, you know. So again, it's not just a, oh, it's something special. Yes, it is something special in history. Changing event, but also this is what we are focused on in this lab.
When they first walk in, they see we are part of the Artemis Generation. Really, like, what is the significance of that? And why is it so important for you as an instructor to get that message across?
It's what's next. It's where the future of humanity is trying to be pushed and go forward at. It's not like we want to just return to the moon. The idea of having a presence on the moon and that they have the potential to one day be involved with such a historic event of how humanity continues to go beyond Earth in a permanent fashion.
You're listening to Are We There Yet?, the radio show exploring space exploration from Central Florida Public Media. You just heard from Goldsboro Elementary's Robert Wakeland, who is in charge of the Magnet School's Space Lab. Now we're turning the mic over to some young space enthusiasts. Our producer, Marion Summerall, spoke with three of Wakeland's fifth grade students, Theodore Brown, Shama B. Singh, and Janelle Young, about what they took away from watching the crew of four's journey around the moon. Here's that conversation now.
There is a saying that y'all are really the next era of STEM space engineers and astronauts and everything like that. And so I really wanted to talk to you about how you're feeling about Artemis.
Kind of made me feel like I was old because I remember when my grandma used to talk about watching the moon landing for the first time. And I was like, well, this is kind of similar. So I was like, this is kind of weird. It's kind of history repeating itself, but I get to see it for the first time. So I was like, oh, wow, this is really different.
I think it was like really exciting to see this because I've never actually seen like anything go to the moon or like it has been a really long time since we've like gone to the moon. So it was really exciting for me, and also seeing it launch, like I've never seen a rocket launch.
Well, for the takeoff, I was watching the feed and honestly, I didn't really think much of it because I thought it was just another regular launch. And then we went outside to see it, but all we could see was part of the comm trail, and then it was past the clouds. But talking about it in the classroom and seeing the video feed of them in the rocket was a pretty cool experience because we don't usually do that. I just feel like this rocket launch is one to remember because we haven't been to the moon since the Apollo missions.
Is there anything took from this mission that you would say was like the coolest part?
I think the coolest part was like when the solar eclipse was it? When it happened and they were like close to the moon and they saw it like on the dark side. Like I've never seen like a picture of that. So I think it was really cool to like see that.
I feel like the funnest part, honestly, was when we were at lunch, they put up a huge video of what was happening on there, but it was really glitchy. And everyone was laughing at it because it was, like, despicable when Gru was trying to steal the moon. So that was pretty funny.
I think the coolest part was seeing them work in space. Like, they were just floating around doing their thing. Like, they knew what was going on. They knew what they were supposed to do, how they were supposed to do it. And then I was like, well, they must have trained and practiced so many times that they're just so normal in space. I would have been losing my mind. Like, what am I doing here?
Was it cool to be able to come to school and talk about it with your friends and see, you know, Mr. Wakeland have the different videos and kind of also just being in this environment?
It's really fun and amazing because not a lot of other schools have the chance to experience this and get a head start on learning about all of space.
Obviously, we can't really pick favorites, but if you had to pick a favorite astronaut from this Artemis II mission, do you have a favorite?
I don't remember her name specifically, but it's the girl.
Christina.
Because she is the only woman to like fly to the moon. And I feel like that's a really cool achievement because there's literally no one else except her that can be the first woman to fly to the moon.
There were a lot of firsts on this mission, which was super cool.
Favorite was, he's like the first African-American that I've seen go to the moon. So I think that was really cool. Yeah, he's my favorite.
So I can't pick one favorite because they're only good because of each other. So I feel like as a group, they work really well together. Like if the captain wasn't there, then they wouldn't have a flight. So I feel like I can't pick one favorite because they all need each other.
That's a great answer too. Wow. Okay, guys, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for taking me through your space lab here. This was awesome.
Of course.
That was our producer, Marion Summerall, speaking with fifth grade students from Goldsboro Elementary in Sanford, Florida. The students were Theodore Brow, Shambhavi Singh, and Janelle Young. Still to come, the work ahead to prep for the next Artemis mission.
They immediately said, oh no, we're going to roll back right away. We're going to start processing for Artemis 3. And we're like, wow, okay, they're serious about this. So we really haven't had too much time to relax and reflect. And yeah, moving right into Artemis 3. So no risk for the wary.
A look at the work ahead for NASA's Crawler Transporter, plus a veteran NASA astronaut reflects on the importance of Artemis. That's ahead on Are We There Yet?
Support for WMFE comes from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University's worldwide campus, where highly ranked online degree programs offer the flexibility to learn what students want from wherever they are. More at erau.edu/worldwide.
You're listening to Are We There Yet? From Central Florida Public Media. I'm Brendan Byrne. As we reflect on the impact of the Artemis mission, I wanted to speak with someone who has ventured off this planet. So we reached out to veteran NASA astronaut Winston Scott to talk about how this mission has inspired the public and how Artemis II is a stepping stone for the future of moon exploration at NASA. Winston, welcome back to Are We There Yet?
Glad to be here.
I've got to ask you, what are your feelings?
I tell you what, I'm feeling so excited and so satisfied. I mean, it was an incredible mission. And one of the really good things I like about it, of course, the mission itself, but I really like the way the public, people everywhere, young, old, all over, really were excited about this. They followed it. I mean, people out at the tennis court were following it. People at my band gigs were following it. So it's really one of those monumental events that has galvanized a lot of people. I'm really happy about that.
Did that surprise you?
No, it did not surprise me at all. I think people are looking for good, positive events. They're looking for events that will make them proud of the great country in which we live. We hear so much negative stuff on the news, but something like this just makes you realize what a great country we live in.
Did you expect in your lifetime that you would see yet another moonshot? What does that reflect on the agency?
Yes, I did expect another moonshot. I was hoping for it sooner than this. I think we're going to have administrations in place for a while that are going to continue to value the space program and push it forward. And as you know, everything really depends on leadership in this country. We have an administration now that really is pushing space. I'll tell you what, I really like the fact that Jared Isaacman is the administrator. I met Jared on a Zoom call many years ago. I don't know him well personally, but I did have a personal call with he and his inspiration full crew some years ago. And when his name was first put forward, I thought that he would be a good person for it. I think it's good that he is a pilot. He's an aviator. Now he's an experienced astronaut, but he doesn't come from the establishment that might have placed limitations on him. He comes from the outside of the agency. And I think that's what we need at this time. So I think we have a great political administration. We have a good leadership in place. We always talk about outside of a box thinking. Well, you can't get outside of the box with inside of the box people.
Did we ever think that there would be astronauts beyond the civilian space agency?
It is wild, but it doesn't surprise me. When I left active duty in 99, I did 4 years at my university. Then I came here to Florida, to the Cape, and I directed the Florida Space Authority. It's now called Space Florida. It's the state space agency. And some, I think 14 states have space agencies. Anyway, I was pushing for then, 20-something years ago, not just me by myself, but myself and my team, we were pushing for what you see happening now. We were pushing for NASA to open up its facilities to private commercial companies, for the 45th Space Wing to open up the Eastern Range to private commercial companies. Jared Isaacman, like Elon Bezos and some others, we needed them to come in and to energize the space program and to make the space program affordable and make space more accessible. For people who are listening, don't get me wrong, I support a strong NASA. I think we need a strong national space program, a strong government space program to fund and conduct esoteric things. So we need a strong NASA, but we need leaders like Jared Isaacman, people who are not stymied or stifled by the paradigms that have politicized the agency over the years. I think we're getting away from that with the new breed of thinkers up there.
Let's go back and look at this Artemis II crew, right? You've got the first person of color, the first woman, the first Canadian international participant to circle the moon. Reflect on that. What does that signify? You talk about accessibility for space. That seems to be that you know, this is paving the way for accessibility and inclusion, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a testament to how far we've come, in the space program, and how far we've come in America. You know, the barriers that were in place to people of color and women 50 years ago, 60 years ago, are no longer there. Those barriers are gone. And we see an example of that with the Artemis crew. Not only do we see an example of that with the crew, but look at the mission control people and look at the press conferences. There's so many women in charge and so many people of color all throughout the agency. And of course, the International Space Station is up there. So we've got some 15 different nationalities represented in space. This crew brought attention to that there are no barriers anymore. The only barriers to people are incompetence. We live in a world now where if you're qualified, you can do it. And that's where we should be. I was very pleased with what I heard the crew members say. You know, they wanted to focus on the great accomplishment of the mission and not focus on the color of a person or the gender of another person. I think this is just a great example of moving us into the future of how the togetherness of the country in which we live today.
For both of your space shuttle missions, you were a mission specialist. Jeremy Hansen, Christina Cook were mission specialists on this mission. How would you rate their performance, mission specialist to mission specialist?
Well, of course, from what I see, their performance was outstanding. I mean, tremendous. I think the whole crew, mission specialists, pilots and so on, I think everybody's performance was outstanding. Now, if you ask them in privacy, they'll probably say, oh, yeah, well, I made a mistake over here on day two. Mm-hmm. I made a mistake over there. You know, nobody's perfect. Right? So that's why we work in a crew. So I make a mistake, my buddy will catch it, or he or she makes a mistake, I'll catch it. That's why we work as a crew. But from what I can see, the entire crew was just fantastic. And the mission specialist, of course, did their jobs in an incredible way. I was also pleased to see that everybody got to fly the vehicle. Jeremy and Christina also got to pilot the vehicle. Now, Jeremy, of course, is a pilot. He's a Canadian fighter pilot. And Christina, I don't know all of her background. She may have some flight experience, but they got to fly the vehicle as well, because we're trying to get to the place where vehicles are so user-friendly that almost anybody can handle them. And then back up, even though I'm the mission specialist in the space program, I was a Navy pilot by background. So I have a lot of first pilot time and fighters and helicopters and props and everything. So I could listen to Victor Glover and to Reed talk about the handling qualities of their capsule when they were doing the Prox Ops demonstration, and I could understand what they were saying.
It sounded like it flew like a dream, right? He seemed very excited about that.
Absolutely.
Artemis 3, what do you expect out of this one as it comes to public attention and public interest in the next Artemis 3? Will this momentum continue?
I believe so. I think people are going to pay attention to Artemis 3, even though they're not going off to the moon. People will have remembered Artemis 2 not so long ago when this happens, and they will be watching because this is the next step. And it will still involve people. It'll involve people who are doing something that will allow us to go to the moon. And they know that the next flight is going to put people on the moon, put boots on the ground again.
We've been speaking with Winston Scott, veteran NASA astronaut.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's not even a week since Artemis 2 splashed down in the Pacific Ocean, ending the more than 9-day mission. Still, work has already begun on Artemis 3. John Giles is the Crawler Element Operations Manager at NASA's Kennedy Space Center. This week, his team will get to work bringing the empty mobile launcher back from its launch site and into the VAB to begin assembling the next SLS rocket to be used for the Artemis 3 mission. John, welcome to Are We There Yet?
Oh, thank you.
Your job is to get that mobile launcher from the VAB to the pad and then back again. So walk me through it, John. You get the all clear. The launch pad is in good shape for you and your team to come in with the crawler transporter. What is that process like?
So the crawler is sitting right outside the pad gate, and we're waiting, like you said, kind of basically to get our all clear. Then they'll open the gates for us. We'll roll up the pad slope. We'll use a laser to line us up underneath so we're perfectly lined up. Then we will jack up just to about where we touch it, and then we'll start making connects and disconnects where we'll disconnect the facility power to the mobile launcher, and then we'll connect them to the crawler power. We'll disconnect any ECS ducts that are there, take platforms, access platforms that are in the way. We'll move all of them. We'll just make sure everything is clear and out of our way. Then when we get the all clear for that, we'll go ahead and jack up. We have to jack up about, there's some pins that are in the mounts that I believe are around 10 inches tall, so we'll jack up over 10 inches. We may go as high as 18 inches to clear everything. Then we'll roll out and take it away from the mounts off the top of the pad, and then we'll start lowering it back down. We want to get our center of gravity as low as possible before we go down the ramp, because as we're going downhill, we have to keep them level, which means the crawler's all the way down in the back and all the way elevated up in the front. So we'll go to the bottom of the pad. That's kind of our critical part there, because we, you know, gravity's working against us there too. It wants us to pull that 22 million pounds down as fast as we can, but we can't allow that. And then once we get to the bottom, sometimes we'll stop for a few minutes, reconfigure a few things, and then we'll head for the rest of the way home on flat ground, which is a lot easier.
I didn't realize that was such a steep slope until I was taken out there myself and got to see it. I mean, that is incredible that you're able to keep it level on such an incline. What do you know what degree or how high that pad is?
You know, you stand back and look at it, and it doesn't look like much, but when that brings the factor of gravity back in, and the crawler lets you know it's working a little harder to go up and down that slope. So pay a little closer attention when we're doing that portion of the trip.
So you get to do it first on this time around, right? When you bring it out, that's kind of the last bit of breath holding, but now you get the hard part done at the beginning.
It's exciting and yet high focused attention. You don't want to do anything wrong. You want to make sure everything goes perfect, which it has every time.
Do you get to go a little bit faster because nothing is on top and it's lighter?
So we will still hang right around our 0.82 miles per hour for the way home. We really only get to control our own speed when there's nothing on top of us. I mean, not even a mobile launcher, no vehicle, nothing. So then we can go whatever speed we want. We don't want to vibrate things any more than we have to. And many years ago, it was determined that 0.82 miles an hour was the smoothest speed.
John, you know, this signals the next chapter in human space exploration and NASA's lunar ambitions. Can you tell me what your team is feeling like?
After all of this hard work for Artemis II, everybody was kind of hoping, okay, we're gonna celebrate this achievement and this milestone. We're gonna take a few days off, and then they immediately said, "Oh no, we're gonna roll back right away. We're gonna start processing for Artemis 3." And we're like, "Wow, okay, they're serious about this." So we really haven't had too much time to relax and reflect on Artemis 2, other than thinking, "What a perfect accomplishment it was," and yeah, moving right into Artemis 3. So. No risk for the wary.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
That was John Giles, NASA's Crawler Element Operations Manager at the Kennedy Space Center. That's going to do it for this week's show. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to the show's podcast feed so you never miss an episode. Do that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or really wherever you get your podcasts. Stay connected with the show. Follow us on social media. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook. We're at AWTY Space. If you've got an idea for a future episode of the show, or you'd like to join us as a guest, reach out. Our email is arewetheryet@cfpublic.org. Are We There Yet is a production of Central Florida Public Media. Our intern is Orion Boone. Our producer is Marion Summerall. Editorial guidance from Latoya Dennis. Support for Are We There Yet comes from our listeners. Until next week, I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.